Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport. Offering service through Silver Airways with daily service from Tallahassee to Tampa and Orlando with connections to the Bahamas. Fares and information available online at silverairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to Florida's $71.8 billion hospitality and tourism industry, whose members provide over 1 million Florida jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at FRLA.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Is an effort to overhaul Florida's public pension system dead? Again?
Nothing's ever dead until day 60, but there's no question that the bill is probably in some pretty big trouble.
Also tonight, some lawmakers say a person's immigration status shouldn't stop them from practicing law when they're otherwise clearly dedicated to the state.
He has legal work authorization to work in our country, has a Social Security card, and has registered for selective service.
We'll also get into healthcare legislation and find out why even an international superstar couldn't close the deal on a publicly funded soccer stadium. In the frantic next to final day of the 2014 Florida lawmaking session, I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. The sponsor of a measure aimed at overhauling the state's pension system says that effort's dead. But bill supporters and opponents alike say they won't declare it a win or a loss until the 2014 legislative session comes to an end. More on that story from Sasha Cordner.
It's day 59 of the 60-day legislative session, but with session coming close to a close, a procedural move by Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Latvala Wednesday may have blocked this year's effort to overhaul the state's pension system.
Well, the maneuvers that took place on the pension reform at this point look pretty promising. Unfortunately, we don't get real excited until the handkerchief falls on the final day, because they always maneuver to get what they want. So we're not giving up.
That's Andy Ford, president of the Florida Education Association, which represents thousands of teachers. Ford says while his group is taking a wait-and-see approach, they still appreciate Senator Latvala's efforts. Latvala was instrumental in causing the death of last year's pension reform effort. This year's pension reform effort, similar to last year's, essentially would have eliminated the traditional pension plan for newly elected officials under the Florida retirement system and would steer them into the other retirement option known as the 401k-style investment plan. It also would have changed the vesting period for newly hired employees and changed the retirement default from the current pension plan to the investment plan retirement option for those who hadn't picked either within 9 months of employment. That effort was later merged together with a non-controversial bill to reform a troubled local government pension system in the House over the objection of Democrats and public employee unions like the FEA.
The local pension issues, it's something that everybody's been working on for years in order to try and improve the current system. And that bill unfortunately got tied up with the state pension issue, which doesn't need any changes, doesn't need any reform. It's working fine. It's actuarially sound, and they just want to tinker with it because they want to, and there's no need. We have one of the best funded retirement systems in the country.
We always hear it said that it's in better shape than in some other states, and that it's true. It's funded roughly around 85%. Even so, the legislature has to kick in more money every year to see that it gets up to snuff and holds its level of funding and is actuarially sound, that it'll be able to pay the obligations.
That's Bob Sanchez with the James Madison Institute, a supporter of state pension reform.
As Yogi Berra once said, it's not over till it's over. However, it does appear that not much will be achieved this year in pension reform, and that's too bad, really.
Still, Sanchez says he hopes the legislature will revisit the issue.
You know, media pundits are always praising politicians who think of the next generation instead of the next election. This year, we had some who were really doing that, the House Speaker, among others, who wanted to save Florida from ever facing the kind of predicament faced by Detroit and some other places, Jefferson County, Alabama, and several cities in California, who have basically gone bankrupt and have been unable to fund their pensions.
And Trilby Republican Wilton Simpson, the bill's Senate sponsor, shared similar thoughts.
You know, I've heard a lot of people say a lot of little things like you don't fix a roof, you know, when it's raining outside, right? You fix it before it rains. And I think that when you look at the pension bill, I think what I was wanting to do would have, in the future, it would have required, you know, would have been a whole better bill than what's going to maybe have to happen. Truth of the matter is, I hope I'm wrong.
Though Simpson's bill was on Thursday's Senate schedule, he confirmed that the effort would not be taken up this year. Still, he says it's not much of a victory for opponents of his effort. He's afraid the legislature will have to make drastic changes in the future because the pension system may not be as sound later on. As for House Speaker Will Weatherford, who made this a priority while he's been leader of his chamber, he remained upbeat following Wednesday's House session.
Nothing's ever dead until day 60, but there's no question that the bill is probably in some pretty big trouble. And, you know, when you try to take on big policy issues, you're not going to score on every single one. And so I'd be disappointed if the bill doesn't pass, but I still think overall we're having a fantastic session.
The standalone local pension reform bill recently passed the Senate and was sent over to the House to consider, and Weatherford says he's amenable to the idea. Meanwhile, Simpson says he too believes the House should take up the local pension bill, but will he bring back the state pension issue again?
You know, I don't anticipate that. What will happen now, we'll go back home, we'll go back to the district, and we will, formulate next year's plan based on the concerns from the district.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
A non-citizen Florida State University law school graduate is just steps away from earning the right to practice law in the state, as we hear from Regan McCarthy.
When Jose Godinez Sempedio was 9 years old, he came to the U.S. from Mexico with his parents on a tourist visa. When the visa expired, he and his parents stayed, a legal violation. But since then, Sarasota Republican Representative Greg Stubbe says Godinez Sempedio has been a model Floridian. He became an Eagle Scout, graduated valedictorian from his high school.
He went on to New College in Sarasota and got an undergraduate degree. He went to Florida State Law School where he graduated with a law degree. He passed the Florida bar exam. And in order for him to be able to get into the bar sent the question to the Florida Supreme Court.
Stubbe says the justices wanted to admit Godinez Sempedio, but were prevented by Florida law.
Basically what the Florida Supreme Court said is, we would admit this individual into the court if the legislature would give us authorization to do so, and actually encourage the legislature to give the statutory authority so that the Florida Supreme Court could decide to admit this applicant into our state as a lawyer in our state.
Lawmakers in the Senate amended what Stubbe calls an otherwise innocuous family law bill last week to allow undocumented immigrants admittance into the bar. And since then, heavyweights like House Speaker Will Weatherford have thrown their support behind the measure.
I mean, I plan to vote for that young man. I think it's the right thing to do. And he's got my support when it gets to the floor.
And that vote came Thursday. Stubbe presented an amendment to the bill, which whittled down the number of people it covers, so much that Stubbe says Godinez Sempedio is the only person he knows of in the history of Florida who would fit under it.
The Senate amendment only states that the individual would be a minor when they were brought here, that they resided in Florida for 10 years, and that they had passed the bar. My amendment to that amendment takes those and adds on that they have legal work authorization approved for by the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, that they've been issued a Social Security card, and that they've registered for Selective Service.
But even with such tight parameters, some lawmakers, like Pensacola Beach Republican Representative Mike Hill, raised several concerns and questions about the measure and what exactly it would do.
Representative Stubbe, if this amendment passes, would we as a body be declaring de facto that this individual is now a legal immigrant?
Others wondered if it would allow those accepted to the bar under the measure to run for seats on the judge's bench. But Stubbe says neither of those things would happen. The measure passed the House with a 79-37 vote. Next, the bill will head back to the Senate for another look. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
A West Florida official says three inmates who were missing after an apparent gas explosion at a jail have been located. Escambia County spokeswoman Kathleen Castro says three inmates who were missing after yesterday's apparent gas explosion at the county jail have been found. She says they were missing as hundreds of inmates were taken to hospitals and nearby jails, but the three, she said, were always under the county's control. Officials say two inmates were killed, more than 180 inmates and correctional officers were hurt in the explosion. County spokesman Bill Pearson says only two inmates and one corrections officer are still at hospitals. Pearson wouldn't describe the extent of their injuries. The Pensacola area was soaked by record-setting rains this week, and parts of the jail were flooded, but officials haven't determined if the weather had anything to do with the explosion. There were reports some of the inmates said they smelled gas before the deadly blow-up. Still to come on Capitol Report, a massive health care train bill encompassing telemedicine, trauma centers, pharmacists, and nurses has been derailed in the Senate.
So here we are on 59th day, and all due respect, we've got another big health care train.
We'll also get some insights on the health care changes now underway in Florida from Humana CEO Bruce Broussard.
This is the first time that they've had insurance, so now it's you got deductibles, you got co-insurance, you got premiums, you got subsidies.
And we'll hear how a publicly funded sports arena plan that was lobbied heavily by former soccer superstar David Beckham may miss the goal in the Florida legislature.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust. Helping donors make a difference through planned giving. Putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust. Empowerment. Education. Employment.
With mere hours left to go before Florida lawmakers finish this year's legislative session, a variety of health-related bills were grinding to a halt today. Lynn Hatter reports on the growing gulf between the House and Senate when it comes to how to manage trauma centers, telemedicine, pharmacists, and nurses.
The Florida Senate is not impressed with a massive health care bill sent to it by the House. The House plan combines a series of health care-related issues. It outlines regulations for telemedicine and puts new rules in place for pharmacists and nurse practitioners. It also attempts to referee a fight between private and nonprofit hospitals over specialized trauma centers. But the House's decision to combine the issues into a single bill in an attempt to woo the Senate has failed, as that chamber began stripping the bill apart with more than 50 amendments filed and most approved. Senator Denise Grimsley also managed to change the bill to settle an ongoing fight between retailers and pharmacists over how many technicians a pharmacist can supervise. An initial compromise on the issue would have raised that number to 3, but Grimsley's amendment lowers it back to where it stands today.
What the language does that we're replacing it with says that the pharmacist may supervise a certified pharmacy technician on a 1-to-1 ratio. Anything above a 1-to-1 ratio has to be approved by the board.
Also thwarted, an attempt to give a carve-out to Jackson Memorial Hospital to operate a remote telemedicine center. Jackson is one of the hospitals at the center of legal challenges related to trauma centers that have raged for a few years now. Both chambers want to place a moratorium on new trauma centers until a study is done to assess the need. The fight is between nonprofit hospitals and for-profit centers, and that was highlighted in an amendment by Republican Senator Miguel Diaz de la Portilla.
This is about saving lives. This doesn't cite a new trauma center. It just allows an existing trauma center to do what its mission is.
While the idea sounds good, several lawmakers, including Senate Rules Chairman John Thrasher, took issue with it.
We're going to have a study of the entire trauma issue, is my understanding. And yet, here we are on the 59th day, adding something that I think probably hadn't been heard in any committee, and something that we all ought to be concerned about.
To which Diaz de la Portilla responded,
"This is a floor amendment just like any other, except that it's been vetted a hell of a lot more than a lot of the things we're going to vote on today and tomorrow, and that we voted on in the last 3 days."
Republican Senator Ana Terry Flores tried to tack a telemedicine-related issue onto the bill, but later withdrew it after Hollywood Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobel expressed that the Senate is not taking up telemedicine.
"I don't believe we have a telemedicine bill at the current time. I don't know where it's at, but I think we have not, it has not cleared all committees."
The partial derailing of the House's train bill does not bode well for the proposal's fate and only covers trauma centers and includes the moratorium language. And when it comes to those trauma centers, the House is seeking to protect three privately owned facilities in Pasco, Marion, and Bay counties. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
As we just heard from Lynn Hatter, the Florida legislature was very much involved with health care issues today, but no matter how those issues ultimately play out, Florida and the other 49 states face some profound changes when it comes to health care, courtesy of the Federal Affordable Care Act. Nearly 1 million Floridians have signed up for health insurance under the ACA. The Sunshine State far surpassed White House goals, although enrollment among Hispanics in the crucial so-called Young Invincibles, 18 to 34-year-olds, appears low. Of the more than 983,000 Florida enrollees, about 28% were Young Invincibles. Federal health officials released the final numbers today, a month after the enrollment deadline. Officials did not say how many had paid their first month's premium, but WellPoint, one of the largest insurers, estimated about 90% had. Mary Shedden, Health News Florida reporter with member station WUSF in Tampa, sat down with a man who knows more than a little about what all this means, Humana CEO Bruce Broussard, during his visit to Humana's St. Petersburg office.
There's really an opportunity for the industry to step out and to be able to move from being viewed as an insurance underwriting and, you know, if you're in good health, we help you. When you're in bad health, we don't help you, to a point that we help everybody, but we're helping people with their health as opposed to just worrying about getting them treatment.
Should people in Medicare Advantage expect to see the premiums and the benefits change?
I know this year, if you look at 2014, we worked really hard to keep the premium stable for our individuals. And we hear constantly from our members that programs like Silver Sneakers is a very important part of their program. And so we strive hard to continue to allow them to have programs like that.
You're collecting data mm-hmm. as part of that, and that's helping you make better calculations about risk. Why is it appropriate for an insurance company to be collecting that health data that some folks probably think is maybe the doctor should be the only one seeing that?
You know, one of the unique aspects of the Affordable Care Act that came out was on the individual area where it was guaranteed issuance. And what that means is we can't reject anybody. We can't adjust their premiums for their conditions. And so we take everybody. And what that allows is no longer it's about underwriting and about anything that's related to their conditions. It's about how can we help them. And so when you see us collecting data, it is really gaining more insight into their health so that we can help them identify the programs they need. So if we know that somebody is smoking, and we do have a wonderful smoking cessation program, we can help them with getting access to that program. If we know that they have some chronic condition like diabetes, we can help them with the diabetes program. So actually receiving the information is not from a pricing point of view. It is actually trying to help them with their programs.
In terms of that, can you talk about what you offered on the exchanges, how it compares to existing Humana plans?
It's a very complicated program. It's a complicated program. Who to call? What to call? Do you call the government? Do you call the insurance company? So there's a lot of confusion there. And then it's new to a lot of people. This is the first time that they've had insurance. So now it's you got deductibles, you got co-insurance, you got premiums, you got subsidies. And so what we've found is that we have spent a lot of time with people, both our representatives in the field and on the phone. And in fact, we've probably have spent hours for one or two individuals a day just because they are really questioning, what do I have? What do I buy? And now, and they're reading it in the newspaper. So the confusion has been high. And one of our responsibilities is to help lower that confusion and to make it easier for them to engage in being healthier.
How much is your overall philosophy of Humana? Get them while they're young, keep them while they're older.
We do think that a long-standing relationship with members is an important part of our business plan, and we believe that because if we can help them as they are younger stay healthier, then as they're older, they will actually be more affordable for them. And so engaging with them over a long period of time is an important aspect of that. Medicare members are with us between 7 to 10 years. And so actually when they first join us, sometimes we lose money. But we look at it over the longer period of time that if we are helping them in the earlier years and getting in the proper programs, making the proper decisions, that it actually will pay off over the long run.
That's Mary Shedden, Health News Florida reporter with member station WUSF in Tampa, talking with Humana CEO Bruce Broussard. Bargain hunters rejoice. Shoppers buying clothes and school supplies will get a 3-day tax holiday come August. The Senate today included the back-to-school tax holiday in a $105 million tax cut package that legislators plan to pass before the end of the week. The back-to-school sales tax holiday would last from August 1st through the 3rd. Under the bill, shoppers would not have to pay sales taxes on any clothes worth $100 or less. Shoppers would not have to pay taxes on school supplies worth $15 or less, or on the first $750 of a personal computer. The bill also includes a 3-day sales tax holiday in September on the purchase of energy-efficient appliances. On top of that, a 9-day sales tax holiday on the sale of hurricane preparation supplies, such as batteries and generators. North Florida is still feeling the effects of the severe storm and flooding event that took place over the past 48 hours. Moderate to light showers could continue as a cold front draped across the Big Bend and has been slowly pushing eastward throughout the day. It stalled in northeast Florida by the evening hours, and this front will stir up moderate to light showers across the Florida panhandle with accumulated rainfall totals from 1/4 to 1/2 of an inch, with isolated areas getting up to an inch of rain. Forecasters say as much as 2 more inches of rain could fall in the Florida panhandle through Friday evening. There are river flood warnings for rivers from the Apalachicola to the Santa Fe. Meanwhile, Florida's State Emergency Operations Center in Tallahassee remains partially activated in response to the flooding in North Florida. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, David Beckham's bid to extend a Florida sales tax rebate program to his proposed Major League Soccer facility may be in jeopardy. As Nick Evans tells us, the Senate chose at the last minute to temporarily postpone a vote on the bill.
Florida lawmakers feel sports facilities like stadiums have an important role to play in metropolitan environments. Not only are they a significant source of tax revenue, but they can serve as a kind of hub, supporting complementary businesses like restaurants. Because of their capacity to promote local investment, Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Ladvalla brought a bill forward to allow new stadiums or stadiums investing in improvements to retain some of the sales tax they generate. But importantly, Ladvalla says the measure only applies to new sales tax revenue.
So, you know, if a team renovates the bathrooms in the stadium and it costs X million dollars and they can't show that that produced a, you know, an increase in sales tax to justify the amount that they ask for, then they can't have it.
In a compromise with the House, Latvala's proposal limits the rebate to 75% of the total increase in sales tax receipts. And no facility may recoup more than $3 million in 1 year. This means that the more money the improvements raise, the more money the facility can potentially keep. The possibilities offered a moment of humor between Senators Lee, Latvala, and Senate President Gates.
Final question. Is there anything in this bill that would preclude sports team facilities, sports team owners, from charging people to use the bathroom at their facilities? Because they charge for everything else. Thank you, Mr. President. It's rhetorical.
Senator Ladvalla, that is a key question.
Mr. President, I think that's probably a service and not a good, so I'm not sure there's sales tax on that anyway.
And there's
the bill also extends this offer to a broader range of sports leagues, including Major League Soccer. Good news for projects in Orlando and Miami. Also, Miami Republican Senator Ana Terry Flores has attached an amendment requiring Major League Baseball to change its stance toward Cuban players before its teams can take advantage of rebates. Flores says these restrictions are unacceptable.
The only way a Cuban player can come and be part of Major League Baseball and be a free agent is by going to a third country, establishing residency, and then they're able to be part of Major League Baseball.
Now, but just before the final vote, Latvala's bill was temporarily postponed, a common parliamentary procedure allowing the Senate to set it aside and decide on the matter later. But the Senate session is scheduled to come to a close tomorrow evening. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Nick Evans. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Silver Airways with daily service from Tallahassee to Tampa and Orlando, with connections to the Bahamas. Fares and information available online at silverairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to Florida's $71.8 billion hospitality and tourism industry, whose members provide over 1 million Florida jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.